My name is Joel. I come from Microsoft Corporate. My focus for the last number of years has been on security and governance. More recently, I've moved to a focused media and entertainment role, so I get to do the movie stuff full-time instead of having to do a bunch of boring audits and compliance stuff. Excuse me. So I guess what we want to do is, if you were here last year at this event, then a little bit of this will be familiar, but I wanted to take the opportunity to update you on the great many things that have transpired and developments that we've made in the last year, particularly bringing to fruition some of the partnerships that we've had with industry leaders and some of the other technology investments. To give you an idea of how secure our facilities are in, I only just figured out in looking at it, that's not even one of our data centers in the picture. Ours aren't that messy. So obviously, I'm talking about Microsoft Azure, which is our cloud platform for doing everything from backup and archive to high compute loads to networking and application services and everything in between. But of course, what we want to talk about here is doing content development in the cloud. And a lot of the question seems to be not just can you actually do it, are the tools there, but is it secure? So many production companies and studios are used to functioning in an air-gapped environment that they've never really had to worry about what happens when you plug it into the internet. But as the requirements for generating content outstrip the capabilities of most on-premises data centers, they're being forced into looking at how can they scale, how can they take advantage of greater capabilities than what they would ever be able to deploy on their own. And of course, that also means there are security challenges. So the concerns are around, what's going to happen when I plug that in? Do I have the right access controls? Are people going to be able to get at the content that I have? And before getting into it, I do want to differentiate what the different cloud environments really are. Sometimes when people think of cloud, it's like, oh, well, I've got my iPhone, I've got iCloud, that must be cloud. And it's a form, but it's really just an application service that sits on a cloud. When we talk about it in this context, it's enterprise scale. It's everything that that I mentioned. It's compute, it's storage, it's networking, it's all of the services that you can build. And something like iCloud is a service that can run on top of that, but it is not enterprise cloud. It's not your environment that you can control. It's not something where you own your piece of infrastructure there in your virtualized environment. So differentiating between the consumer service and the enterprise service is pretty important in understanding how do pipelines move into a cloud context. When we think about the pipeline, it really does go end to end, because you start at the device where you're doing ideation and conceptualization of what your content is going to be, and ultimately you can even do the creation of content on the client device. In this case, if you've never seen one before, that's a Surface Studio. And as you do that development, then you start using the services that are native to the cloud. Things like video analytics, which allows you to ingest content into a storage account and create a bunch of metadata around it as it scans and goes through artificial intelligence and machine learning services to extract information about speech to text and facial recognition and sentiment analysis, whatever it happens to be that's going through through that content. And it can be with any tool. So if it's 3D art, they can use any of a number of different client environments that can be fully virtualized in the cloud. It could also be that you're just working remotely, using client-side tools and interacting with data that is stored in the cloud. But you have that freedom of whatever it is that somebody wants to use, they can do it. The cloud does not lock you into a particular tool set that the cloud only supports. And then ultimately, this stuff is going to go to an end device. So really, you've got from creation to distribution, all capable of happening within the cloud. But even so, it's going to be hybrid. We fully understand that most organizations, you know, most media companies or production partners are not ready to just lock and stock, drop all of this stuff into the cloud. There's a lot of investment in on-premises hardware and software and other kinds of infrastructure that you still want to be able to amortize and get use out of. So really, it's both. It's being able to extend your on-premises tools and environments into the cloud, and you know, ultimately then, a few years down the road, you make the decision of, do you keep upgrading what you have, or do you, you know, really transform into a cloud-based business? So let's take a look at what a few of those individual pieces are. First, we have getting information into the cloud, and that can happen in a variety of different ways. It could be network connectivity, it could be what we call lift and shift of copying a bunch of stuff onto a port, you know, basically a portable device and moving it into a cloud data center. But ingestion, you know, can be anything. It can be camera files, it could be, you know, stuff from a workstation, doing 3D modeling, doing digital dailies and putting them into the cloud where your editorial systems can start moving them around. And next, of course, doing visualization. And you know, a lot of what this entails is, for those of you in the 3DFX space, you're very familiar with this, but sitting down at a workstation and doing that initial heavy compute, whether you're doing simulation and modeling or you're doing your final rendering, you're creating a lot of those assets that are then going to be used in the final release. Once you have all these pieces together, it's time to start stitching them into a story, and using tools that like Adobe Premiere or Avid Media Composer to do all of the different mechanisms that are going to allow that creative process to start coming together. One of the biggest problems that we see, particularly in studio environments, is what happens to this massive amount of data as it's both created, and then ultimately at the end of the production, what happens to it? I think it's safe to say that 99, maybe even 100% of organizations, in the studio community now, everything is on tape. And if it's not on tape, then it's on stacks and stacks of hard drives in somebody's closet. That's not a very useful place to keep data. It's not very secure, and you have no way, in most cases, of knowing even what's on those tapes. In a panel session that we have this afternoon, I'll be up again and talking with a production partner that we've been working with, and I know for a fact that he has about 300 drives sitting in a closet that they don't know what's on them. So that makes things interesting. But at the tail end of that, what do you keep? If you don't know what's on it, is it worth having terabytes, petabytes of information sitting in a closet somewhere? Does it even make sense to put it into the cloud and keep it there if it's just not something that you're ever going to get any utility out of? Then on the tail end of that, getting it to consumers. How are you getting money out of that information? And then how are you, if you've got stuff that's in a large-scale archive today, isn't there a way to get some intelligence out of that and to monetize previous investments? And again, in the studio community, where you're dealing with 100 years worth of film and television archive, there's real money locked up in those assets. So moving into the cloud, unfortunately, it is not trivial. Even though I'm from Microsoft, I'm not going to stand here and say that this is a super easy thing. All you have to do is copy your data in and you're ready to go. You are dealing with 100 years of legacy of how film and television production has been performed for decades. And there's a lot of legacy infrastructure, a lot of investment. So, that's why there's going to be, there's going to be a hybrid environment for a number of years still. Even in systems that are already fully digital, like an Avid Edit Bay,
moving that to a cloud environment takes, you know, it's moving workflows, it's moving processes that that have been very static for a very long time. So in a hybrid environment, what we see happening is that people are going to keep their current systems and start moving chunks of information into a cloud environment. You might just be archiving your dailies. You might be starting to have live data up in a cloud storage account, so that editors, remote editors, could be working in a virtual workstation from perhaps even from a set location. Or they just might be trying to get another copy of that data instead of having to shuttle things around on a USB stick or on a lazy drive. It gives you the ability to start getting better protection, better security around content. But it's still in that mixed-use environment where people that are on set are, they're working with live data and they're backing it up over the network or, doing large data dumps for some of those bigger productions. Let's look a little bit at the security aspects of moving into the cloud. So we've seen that, we're working in that mixed environment. We can start bringing a heavier, security posture to content as it exists, both on-prem and in the cloud. One of the greatest ways that you can do that is encryption. And with encryption then comes the need for managing that information, managing the security keys, managing access controls to these assets. So there's been some innovations recently in Azure Storage that allows not only a variety of different disk types that have default encryption at rest, but also now completely granular access control like you might be familiar with in a Windows Server environment. So any Active Directory privileges and permissions that are granted can now be applied to Azure disks, Azure files, and other storage mechanisms so that you can really tightly control access to assets through the end user tools. So as long as you're signing on through a directory, then those permissions are going to be native and they're going to be respected in the content itself. So by doing that kind of encryption, then your assets are always going to be protected. Because even if somebody manages to exfiltrate some data, if they don't have the key, then presumably they don't have a quantum computer at their disposal where they can crack the encoding on it. As I said, this kind of security is available across all storage types. Basically at almost a hardware level, disks are being encrypted across the entire platform. But you have the control. You can either use a key that is generated by a Microsoft key service, or you can bring your own. So if you have some trepidation about, well, I don't want to put everything into the cloud, I still need to keep a level of control, you can do that. It's called a bring your own key and allows you to, basically to provide jury over, over the management of your key infrastructure. So I mentioned it exists across everything, and it's really a fairly simple mechanism of just going in and flipping a few bits in your storage account to enable that kind of protection for any content that's being put in there. In addition, some of the work that we've been doing in particular over the last year is around defining what these workflows look like. Security is not a one-stop shop, unfortunately. You can't really say that just because I'm putting something into a cloud and you inherently trust that a data center is physically secure, in the end it doesn't really matter, because the security comes down to how are you configuring your environment, what protections are you putting into place. And part of this is understanding what the individual workflows are, because the requirements as it comes to security are going to be different if you're doing rendering versus you're doing editorial, asset management, even basic identity management. If you're not defining your security processes and policies according to what you're doing, then that generic approach is not going to catch all of the possible ways that data is moving, the possible ways that data is being accessed. So as a result, what we're doing is creating end-to-end workflows that are customized for the type of work being done. So we've created, working with a security organization that some of you may be familiar with, independent security evaluators, we've created documentation and qualified environments where if you're doing burst rendering for, you know, in a hybrid environment, if you are doing asset management and editorial using Avid, you know, we've pre-qualified these environments so that you can set it up, you can follow the guidance in order to know, you know, how does this need to be configured at a broad stroke, what tools exist to help you lock down these environments, and you can, you know, if you follow the guidance there, you can be fairly well certain that when it does come time to audit your workflow, you're going to be well set, you know, to pass that audit and be able to deal with that tier one content from the major studios. And it does include a pretty broad range of the services that exist within Azure already. So, you know, the security, you know, security services offered by, you know, even something as simple as role-based access control. You know, we're pulling every lever within the cloud platform to make sure the content is fully secure when it sits, you know, when it sits in Azure. And that's, you know, that includes Azure Security Center, and it includes third-party tools as well. In the editorial case, of course, that means Avid, where we have created a custom environment that allows you to do dailies editing and management in a cloud-native format. So don't worry, we are providing these slides to you, so don't feel like you have to, you know, take notes and duplicate this diagram. But, you know, as an example of some of the things that that are being tested is, you know, bursting from, you know, what is probably a large-scale on-prem environment, if you think of something like, you know, a large window, I can't name any of them, well, actually I can't, so Mr. X, under the Technicolor brand, we did a lot of work with qualifying their render environment so that, you know, new titles like Hellboy are being rendered completely within within Azure. And we talked about the architecture for that at SIGGRAPH this past summer. But what it shows is that these workloads can be completely contained. That even though you're connecting an environment that might otherwise have never been connected to the internet, it affords you the ability to, you know, at will scale into, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of compute cores in order to, you know, to build out 4K, 8K, whatever, you know, scale of 3D content it is that you're trying to build. So looking at the post process, you know, obviously rendering is one piece of that, but then at some point things have to start being stitched together. So about a year and a half ago, we signed a partnership with Avid, who I've already mentioned a couple of times, and what they're doing is moving their entire workflow, their tool set, into Azure, so that Media Composer, Media Central, Pro Tools, all of the systems that you're already familiar with can be backed by a cloud. Of course, all their stuff will still work on-prem, you know, in an isolated edit bay or however it is that you're used to working. But there'll be native capabilities of being able to automatically archive and run analytics on content that you bring into your media bins. Asset management can be completely backed by Azure Storage. You'll be able to run Media Composer in a virtual machine, also attached to, you know, attached to your storage environment. And that storage can exist anywhere. It could be that you have a huge ISIL on-prem, you could have Nexus file systems, you could have, you know, Azure Blob storage, and you're gonna see it all as a single namespace. So you don't have to fiddle around with, you know, gee, is my stuff in Nearline? Is it in cool storage? Has it been archived in cold? All of these tiers of storage and access can be seen as one, and you let the system on the back end deal with, you know, how does it have to retrieve something, and how does content have to be moved around? So it gives you a lot of flexibility in a very secure context because it's all within your storage account. So even though you have that connectivity between your edit bay and you know, a cloud account over the internet, you know, it's still all ring-fenced within your security context. And if you want to take the next step of protecting your connection, then you use ExpressRoute, which gives you a dedicated dark fiber link from your facility into the nearest point of interconnect. Could be something like SohoNet, could be Equinix, where you now have a completely private link so that you're essentially not going over the internet anymore. And you can further encrypt it with VPN. You know, you can use IPsec, you can use, you know, whatever mechanism, Cisco on either end. in order to protect that traffic so that you are completely isolated from outside interference. On the point of ingest and accelerating access, one of the key moves that we did in this past year was the acquisition of Avere Systems. They get used very heavily in VFX and render environments. It has applications into other industries, but principally what it does is accelerate rendering by putting that large-scale content closer to the render nodes. So in this case, you're dealing with a really large texture file, a really large simulation file. You can put it in the cache. It replicates that into the virtual cache, in your cloud account, and then, can spin up render cores much, much faster, and you don't have that latency of having to, talk back and forth between, on-premises storage or even cloud storage and where your compute capacity is located.
How big are those edge devices?
That's a good question. I actually don't know. In the virtual, in the VFXT, which just went to GA, which is the virtual Avere cache, I don't know that there is a limit on the size. It's going to be limited only by the size of your storage account. But feel free to drop me an email, and I can get you some specific numbers on that. But otherwise, it's the same shipping devices that you're already familiar with. But again, from the Avid perspective, you've got Media Central, and that can be surfaced either through the Cloud UX interface, which now runs natively in Azure, or you can virtualize the client components to connect to what I was talking about earlier, which is that you've got that unified space for doing all of the storage and asset management. It gives you that ability to very quickly realize results, because you can you can do your transcoding on-prem, on-set, start working with proxies of the data while stuff while your high-res content starts trickling to the cloud, or if you have a mechanism like Databox, which also went to GA this year, which gives you a variety of sizes, everything from an individual disk to a table-sized box that you can ship over DHL to a gigantic, half-rack pedestal machine that's a full petabyte of storage. However you want to be moving things back and forth, it'll populate into your account. It gives you the ability to start that creative process right away. I seem to have had the same slide twice. So, wrapping up, I just want to point back to the far left of that first slide of where content creation happens. And you might have seen this year that we've released a whole new generation of devices. In the upper right there, you see Surface Hub 2, which replaces both the 55 and 84-inch devices that you may have seen in a few places. They'll be a lot less expensive now, and give you the ability to, like you see there, have multiple panels all in the same environment. So when you're looking at doing collaborative video editing, you can have that site-to-site interactively. I've seen it working. It's very cool. And the next generation of the other creative devices, like the Surface Studio, and the Surface Book. And from a security perspective, there are advantages to using Microsoft devices as part of this end-to-end workflow, because they're designed for the enterprise environment, so they have the native native TPM supported or TPM supported BitLocker. I myself had one of my machines stolen, and I don't have to worry about it, because native AES 256 encryption on the drive means it's a brick; nobody can use it. So in a production environment where lots of people, using devices, lots of things, of people going back and forth and things happening, using something like a Surface Go as a tablet, nothing can happen to it. Because on the one hand, you'll have Active Directory credentials for accessing the machine, and by BitLockering it, then even if like mine, the machine goes missing, they can't even boot the thing up. So the content and the information that you know, or associated with that production cannot be breached, you know, physically. So I think that takes us to the end of our time. I don't know if we have time for a couple questions or not, but